Today we'd like to finish out Acts chapter 20, then Lord willing we will pick up with Acts chapter 21 next week. As we look at the final few verses in Acts 20, we started and got through most of the first part of verse 35. I'll read that again and make another comment or two and then focus in on the latter part of that text. Acts 25 says, in all things, Paul said, I gave you an example, so that laboring, he ought to help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. When you start looking at that verse, one of the words that jumps out, and there are several words, we tried to go through these individually and make a variety of points. One of the words that should catch your attention is remember. As you think about life, whether it is a young person or it is an adult, maybe it's around the house, remember to take out the trash. Remember to cut the grass. Or at school, young people are told, remember the test, or remember to study for this because it's especially difficult. We are all around us, we're told to remember. Well, in the Bible, you also have this word. It's obviously used here, and it's an interesting word from the sense that normally when it occurs, it describes remembering in view of don't forget. There's a warning that is often attached to this. It's used over Luke chapter 17, Luke 17 and verse 32. Whose wife is to be remembered? Anybody recall? Lot's wife. Same word. Remember, there is an implied warning there. She is an example, and you need to look at her, because if you don't and you don't apply the lesson, bad things are going to happen to you. You also have that word being used in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 5. John warned a congregation, remember therefore from whence thou art fallen and repent. It's sad to say, but God's people can be forgetful. What do you think promotes that sometimes as far as forgetfulness? Why are we sometimes in a position where we fail to remember what we should and therefore we fail to do what we should? Why are we forgetful? All right, sometimes I think, especially in our world, people are so consumed with this, that, and the other thing. Maybe you've got younger kids and feel like you're pulled in a lot of different directions, maybe a lot of obligations at work. Why else do we fail to remember?
Distracted by, all kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, all around us, places to go, things to think about, things to see, just a ton of distractions. All right, at the end of the verse, Acts 20, 35, he says, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Now, who said those words? Jesus did. Can you point back to Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John and find those words anywhere in those four books? Well, you have maybe the sentiment there, but as far as an actual quote, you do not find those actual words. But Paul's talking to who? Anybody remember from Acts chapter 20? He's talking to the... No? All right, they're elders, and they're elders from what congregation? The church at Ephesus. They were Ephesians, right. They apparently were familiar with that saying. Paul says, remember the words of the Lord Jesus. Well, did they hear those words, or had Paul taught those words to them? They hadn't heard them firsthand. I don't know exactly how they got this information, but they were familiar with this information. And Paul said, I'm giving you also this warning. He'd already warned them as far as taking heed to the flock because of the false teachers. So they've gotten this information. And the fact that it's not recorded anywhere in Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John tells us that we do not have, and I think this is common sense, most people would probably not be too hard, too difficult to convince of this, that when we look at Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, we don't have everything that Jesus said. There's no way. I mean, if you're going to talk about what somebody has said as far as a teacher over a 3.5 year period, even if we tried to put that on CDs, can you imagine how many CDs we'd have stacked up or how many jump drives you would need? I mean, that audio takes a long time, and he said a lot of stuff. But, so when somebody comes along and says, well, we don't have everything that Jesus says, is that a problem? No. I mean, the child might not know that everything that mom or dad said, but is that necessary? No. I mean, if you're the child, what do you need to know? What was relevant, what was specific to you, the things that were especially germane or important to you. And that's also true when we look at the spiritual realm. Paul, how he learned that, we don't know. Maybe that was from the time that he had in Arabia, as we read about in the Galatian letter. But he did apparently have quite a bit of information that we may not have, but we have 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17, everything that God wants us to have. Now, when we think about people and it comes to giving, and that's what we're talking about at the end of verse 35, he said it's more blessed to give than to receive. When people talk about giving, preacher talks about that, Bible class teacher talks about that, what's the first thing that jumps into the mind when we talk about giving?
You're always talking about that.
Well, I was looking for a different answer, but that is one good answer. People will say, you're always talking about giving. But let's be a little more specific. The type of giving. When people talk about giving, what's the first thing that comes to mind? It is giving in the terms of money. And if you read about or see giving on TV, you never hear about people give your time, right? They say, we've got sick kids over here, or we have hungry children over here. They're not interested in your time. They're generally not interested in your clothing, at least if it's an overseas venture. They want your money. Get your credit card, send in a check, or however, donate online, all those kinds of things. But when you start thinking about the Bible, isn't monetary giving really a small part of what God says, I want you to remember? Yeah. When you start thinking about giving, what else could tie into that or does tie into that? Yeah. Let's think of some passages. Romans chapter 12 and verse 1. Paul said, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present what? You present your body as a living sacrifice. Could you do that and not spend a single cent? Absolutely. Would you say that Romans 12 and verse 1 is an example of giving? I mean, if you are presenting your body, you're giving of, you know, maybe your time, obviously, and maybe your muscle strength, or maybe your intellect, or some other aspect of your body. Maybe something needs to be sorted, so using the dexterity of the fingers, whatever that might be. So that's definitely there. What about Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 15? He talks about the fruit of our lips. Would you say that that is a form of giving? Yeah. I mean, you think about giving someone praise. You think about offering someone commendation. Maybe you make a nice plaque. Maybe you create a certificate. But it's also possibly to verbally praise someone. And that's helpful, I think, to all people, but especially to young people. When you think about giving, let's go back to the book of Malachi for just a second. That's an easy book to find just before Matthew. There were some people who, before Jesus came into the world, they knew about giving, and they were also interested in giving. But let's see about the type of giving that we have there. And then we'll also run somebody over to 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 7. So Malachi 1 or 2 Corinthians 9. Sherman, which one you want? All right, we'll let you have 2 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 7. We'll also look at Malachi. That'll be Gary. Malachi chapter 1, verses 6 through 9.
A son honoreth his father, and a servant his master. If then I be a father, where is mine honor? And if I be a master, where is my fear? Saith the Lord of hosts unto you, O priests that despise my name. And ye say, wherein have we despised thy name? Ye offer polluted bread upon mine altar, and ye say, wherein have we polluted thee? In that ye say, the table of the Lord is contemptible. And if ye offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? And if ye offer the lame and sick, is it not evil? Offer it now unto thy governor, he will be pleased with thee, or accept thy person, saith the Lord of hosts. And now, I pray you, beseech God that he will be gracious unto us. This hath been by your means. Will he regard your persons, saith the Lord of hosts.
Thank you. There's a lot there. We often don't read from that chapter or that book, but what's being said? I think you probably got the gist of it. We're talking about giving. The people were willing to give to God, but when they offer a gift to God, what was their gift like? It should have been the best, and they knew that. That was very clear in the Old Testament, but what was their gift?
The lame.
Yeah. Well, God, you want a sheep? I'm good with giving a sheep, but which one am I going to take? I'm going to take the one that is the worst of the lot. Nobody else wants it. It's useless to me. In fact, it's just kind of a drag on the herd. So what am I going to do? Have you ever seen anybody do that with church? Over the years, there have been some people, they have had some junk. I mean, there was this, I'm just going to throw this out as far as an illustration too. Somebody's got an old ping pong table. I mean, the thing is 75 years old. The table needs resurfaced. You know, the net is bug infested. One of the legs is pretty shaky. Another legs, you know, well, we had to replace that one, so it's about 3 inches short, but I mean, it still works. We're going to donate the table to the church. You think there's some people who do that? There are. And then some who are really brazen might say, we'd like a receipt for our taxes. You know, could you give us a $100 donation letter? Which, you know, we're not opposed to letters, But we're going to take the junk and just kind of punt it off in the congregation. Now, I'm not saying we got to have first-class stuff all the time, but if you're going to make a donation, and I'm sure the Goodwill gets the same kind of thing, or sometimes people donate to the Salvation Army. I know when Beth worked there, they actually had some sorting that was going on. Our daughter worked there for a while. And if this is junk, this is scrap, and out to the trash bin it goes. I've never really understood that as far as let's take some of the worst stuff that we have and give that to God. Or, you know, here's the guy, you know, he's making $1,500 a week and throws $2 in the collection plate. That seems a little like Malachi chapter 1 to me. Maybe he's got some real heavy expenses, maybe he's coming out of a bankruptcy, but, you know, $2 on that level of income just seems really awful. So when we think about giving, we want to make sure, you know, we may not be able to give nearly as much as the next guy, but to try to make that a decent contribution. I mean, it would be like going to a birthday party and, you know, you've got the means to give a child a nice gift. Maybe it's the first grandchild and you say, well, hey, you know, we went down to the dollar store and found this El Cheapo toy. You'd probably get some strange looks from some people and saying, hey, you know, we didn't expect you to spend $100, but you could have spent at least $5. Or you could have spent at least 10. You're gainfully employed, you both work, you got a nice house, you know, you got a luxury SUV, and here you come with a 50-cent toy. It just is not, it's not good as we think about that from the secular world. And I think that's not a problem for most of God's people, but every once in a while some people can get stingy. And Paul talked about that, 2 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 7. Sherman, let's take a look at that.
So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver.
Thank you. Now you see two problems here. Malachi chapter 1, God, we're going to give you the worst that we have. We're going to give you the stuff that nobody else wants. On the other side of the coin, somebody says, all right, I'm going to make a pretty good gift. It's like going to the, anybody ever been in a position where you gave grudgingly? Not church-wise, some other setting. Well, I'm not sure you gave, but I think they kind of took, but anyway. But yes, yeah, some people pay the tax bill in a way that's grudging. Any other thoughtful examples? That was one. Have you ever gone to a wedding you really didn't want to go to? But I mean, you were just because maybe it was a longtime family friend or something else that you hadn't seen in a long time, and after 20 years, they send you the wedding invitation. And you thought, great, got to go. And, you know, we probably need to get a nice gift. But I think most people have that experience, or maybe it's a birthday party, or maybe it's something else. But there can be times where we are invited to a social function, a gift is expected, or maybe a gift is requested, and we give more than we would normally want to. And that happens. I mean, that's just a part of life. And you do find that experience where people give in a somewhat grudging way. We're not giving the gift with a lot of joy. Not that we hate, really, despise it, but this is not a pleasant experience. And God says, I don't want that. You know, I don't want your crummy sheep, or your you know, $2, if that's all that you want to see, if you can kind of, you know, chintz by, it's better just to keep it. So the attitude really plays a big part here. Stan?
I think the worst or maybe the best example of that I've ever seen is in the workplace. It used to be, not so much anymore, but it used to be that companies seemed to vie with each other to see who could give the most to the United Way. I've never seen so much arm twisting in my life, and I've never seen such grudging giving as there was in that situation.
Yeah, that's a great illustration. Actually, talked about that with somebody yesterday at the harvest party. And I may have used this before if you haven't heard it, or if I didn't, here it is quickly. When I was in the service, there was an old master sergeant. Guy had been in about 18 years. And Stan and I were talking about this a little last night. Maybe that's what brought it to mind. These guys knew several of the tricks. And I was talking to this guy one day, and he said, ah, Brad, he said, here's what I do. I didn't do what he said, but he said, this is how you handle that. He said, you sign up. Because if you were in for quite a while, the people who were above you and the people who rated you took note of that. And that might not have been a career killer, but it definitely was not a career booster. So he said, what I do is I sign up and, you know, all right, you know, I'll give them $20 a week or $50 a week. I mean, it was back in the day, that was a lot of money. And I thought, wow, you know, you're really generous. He said, oh, no, that's just part one. So you sign up for that, and then everybody sees a slip. Well, so-and-so, he's the biggest giver in the place. And then he said, you just run over to finance. We're paid every 2 weeks. You go over to the finance office next week, and you stop it. And you tell them, I decided that I've changed my mind. I don't want that withdrawal. So he never had anything deducted out of his check. But his superiors were left with the impression that he was truly a good giver. So he actually lied, kind of like Ananias and Sapphira back in Acts chapter 5. So that takes a grudging spirit to the next level. So I guess there's kind of a graduation of sin there, and you can really get into the extremes. But you're right. It was arm twisting at all levels. They really tried to put, and I don't know if that's what people, in the secular workforce, anybody really have the screws put to them? For things like UNICEF, all right, one. Anybody else? Two. All right, so three. So that does happen outside the military. Any other thoughts on that before we move down a little bit more?
Tipping at the restaurant. Sometimes you get rotten service and you don't really want to tip, but maybe you
can. Yeah, that's another, I think, really good illustration, especially with what's happened with COVID. You may have gotten terrible service, but when you look at the person who is the waiter or the waitress, you're thinking, he or she is being run in 10 different directions, and there's really no way for anybody, even on their best day, the best worker, for them to do what we've come to experience or maybe come to expect in the past. So, all right, you know, I really don't think that they deserve it, but I'm going to go ahead and give them a decent tip. So that is another great and very thoughtful illustration. Thank you. Stan.
Well, I had a comment on this verse we've been going over, but not so much what you're talking about right now.
Okay, we're going to get to blessed, so if, maybe you'll want to come back to that. Tim?
I was just going to say that some people, and I'm sorry to say even in our churches, but probably any kind of churches, there's a certain amount of people that that particular church will call for a contribution of foodstuffs to give away to the needy, and people are going through their pantries and they'll pick out all the stuff that's been in there for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, and they wanted to get rid of it, but this is their chance to make themselves look good in front of somebody they think. So they take all that old stuff and they'll pawn it off on the church and hope that they'll give it away, and then they'll get some kind of accolade for it, you know. When really they just want to get rid of it.
Yeah, anyway. It's expired. We wouldn't eat it. Well, I don't think there's too much mold in there. Yeah. Let's go ahead and take it to the church pantry. Now, that's probably extreme, but you do find people who reason that way. Let's get somebody lined up for Luke chapter 14. What you just said lines up so well with that. We're going to start you at Luke 14, 12, and then read verses 13 to 14 as well. Who wants to be our helper? Who wants to be our reader? Luke 14, 12. All right, Bonnie. Anybody, while she's getting that, anybody else that wants to make a thought? No one? Comment? Betty?
Going back to the United Way, whenever I was working, they were real strong at pushing that you contribute to it. And I did for several years until it came out that they were using more of the money that was being contributed for the people that were running it than what they were giving. And a lot of us said, we're not going to do that. Now, they may have cleaned up their act since then, but at that time, it was. So you have to be careful, you know, who you give to and know what percentage they are giving to the people that they're trying to help.
Yeah, people do get pushed in. Some people have bought from a door-to-door salesman. They didn't want the magazine. They didn't want the cleaning product. They didn't want whatever was being hawked, but they went ahead and said, I sold a bunch of stuff growing up for Scouts, and I can still remember. You think I talk fast now? You should have seen me back in the day. They were Scout-O-Rama tickets. They were a buck a piece. So I don't know if it was Mom's idea or my idea, but there was a bank about 3 miles from us. And I went to that bank every Friday after I got out of school. And they had a parking lot, which would be about from, you know, where I am out to our parking lot. And I would go just watch for people. And as they got out of the car, I would go up and meet them at the car, and I'd start talking to them as they came into the bank. And sometimes, you know, they tell me, I don't have, oh, hey, you know, you're going in the bank, just a dollar, you know, so see if I could coax them. And I'm sure a lot of those people did not want to buy a Scout-O-Rama ticket. I'm sure a lot of people who bought the ticket did not go, probably never cared. But again, it was just, you know, it's just a buck. So, all right, here you go, kid. You know, leave me alone. But people do buy things. And, you know, kids come into the door sometimes, kids from the neighborhood sometimes, they're, you know, selling things for ban. I don't want the box of oranges. I don't want the candy. I don't want whatever it is. But, you know, I think you're a good kid. I appreciate the work that you're trying to do as far as make a little money for school. So we do sometimes get into that grudging mode, but God says keep that out of the church. All right, let's go to our reference. This is a passage which I had kind of forgotten about, but it really, I think, is important, and it certainly is very relatable to what we're looking at here. It's a very intriguing verse, especially when you look at verse 14. Luke 14, 12 to 14.
Then he also said to him who invited him, when you give a dinner or a supper, do not ask your friends, your brothers, your relatives, nor rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back, and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, and the blind.
Let's stop right there for a second. Think about what Jesus is saying. You're going to have this big party. A lot of people are going to come over. You're going to have a really good time. People for that kind of event would normally invite who?
Your friends.
All right. My friends, they're people who are just like me. The homeless don't throw any parties, do they? At least not typically as we think of parties. I mean, they probably have their own little gatherings. But when the average person or the super wealthy, you think about Martha's Vineyard and some other places, are they out there asking the poor to come? Do what they want the people who are sick and crippled to come? Not to my party. We're going to have a happy party. You know, everybody's able to, you know, move about freely and they've got plenty of money. Well, let's keep reading.
And you will be blessed because they cannot repay you.
All right, let's stop right there for a second. Jesus says when it comes to repaying you, what do you think he means there as far as a repayment? They're going to slip you 20 at the door? No. What's he mean? Yes, I had you over to my house for a party, and you're going to reciprocate. You're able to do that just as I am. All right, a little bit more.
For you shall be repaid at the resurrection of the just.
Ever notice that?
Your reward will come later.
Yeah, but it's not just a reward. Jesus says when you were helping out the people who were poor, you were helping out the people who were blind. We think about the people who could not hear. You helped out the people who were crippled. You helped out the people that the world looked down on, the people that the world said, we don't want you at our party. Jesus said those people who were trodden down, and whether he had in mind their brethren, I certainly think that qualifies, but maybe even to the extent of people who truly needed help in the world. Jesus said there's going to be some form, some type of special recognition for that at the end of time. I think that's a verse that is rarely preached on, and like I say, it was one that, in studying this, that came to my attention. I thought, I need to make sure that I bring that up. Because when we start talking about this verse, it's more blessed to give than to receive. You can see, I think, the immediate connection there with what the Lord said in Luke chapter 14. Let's talk about this word blessed for a little bit, and then we'll see, again, if you have some thoughts. When you hear that word blessed, what immediately comes to mind? Blessed are the... Where do we find that? All right, the Beatitudes, Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, verses 3 through 11. When you look at that word outside the New Testament, it described a happy day or happy times. And it so happens that as Bonnie read through that, that word blessed is used in that text as well. Blessed are the people that help those that are far less fortunate. They will certainly be blessed because God will repay them at the end of time. Now, we touched on this in our last class. I want to revisit it, and then we'll move down to verses 36 through 38. Thinking about this, Jesus says it's more blessed to give than to receive. There are some statements which are universal truths, right? Anybody know what a universal truth is?
Every situation?
Yes. What would be an example of a universal truth? That one might be a little more difficult.
Do others as
one more.
Do to others as you walk into.
All right. If something that Jesus has taught, and that would be a good one, the golden rule, that's the universal truth. That's always right. We could look at it in terms of math as well. If you have two and two, what's it always going to equal? If it's really two and it's really two, then it's always going to be four. Now, bearing that in mind that we do have some universal truths, would you say that this statement is universally true on the face of it? It is more blessed to give than to receive. Or if you want to make this a little more dramatic, it is always, it is 100% of the time more blessed to give than to receive. Would that statement be true or false? There is never, let's change it around a little bit. There is never a time when the receiver is or feels more blessed than the giver.
I'd say if someone is in really dire straits and someone helps them out, to them, that could be so much more, more meaningful than the person who gives it to them. Now, the person who does the helping, sure, they're appreciative that they're able to help someone else, but the person really might need the help more than the other person even knows, and so the receiver might be more blessed.
Yeah, that kind of gave us a shortcut to Betty. Several years ago, I think this is probably the only time in my life that we did this. We were in Fort Wayne. There was an older lady who was living next to a retired school teacher, and we were, I don't know, making a cake or something. And it was one of those times where you had to have sugar or flour. There was an ingredient that there was no substitute. And we were kind of at the stage of the process where it had to go in right now. There was not enough time to go to the store. So I told Teresa, I said, well, you know, Mrs. So-and-so next door, I mean, we didn't talk to her a lot, but I bet she's got that. And I don't think that she would mind, you know, lending us half a cup or a cup, whatever it was. And I said, yeah, I'm going to go talk to her. Well, I did. And she said, sure. But then she said this. She said, turnabout is fair play. she never came back and asked for anything, but I thought, well, good for you. And we certainly would have been willing to give her whatever she needed. But on that occasion, that was just kind of a freebie as far as an extra point. But anyway, to go back to that, let's say it was a half a cup of sugar. Do you think that probably mattered very much to her? I mean, she probably had all kinds of sugar, probably 10 pounds. So half a cup of sugar, I mean, it was nothing to her. But how much was that to us? I mean, that was a critical thing for us. So we were the receiver, and we were far more blessed than she was as the giver. It was thought, okay, well, hey, you know, oh, that was actually kind of helpful to me. You know, I need to go and get some more cinnamon or whatever it was. So this is a general statement, but it's also, I think, a good example of you have here the tense, which helps make the point a little different. It is more blessed not just to give, but to continuously give. And then with receive, you have the same thing. It is described with ongoing action. Now, if you add that additional information in, that changes the thought a little more, doesn't it? We can not only make the point that we were looking at initially before anything was said about the tense, because it's not 100% true in every circumstance, but why would Jesus say it's more blessed to continually give than to continually receive? What's true for the person who is continuing to receive in life? I mean, they get and get and get and get, but they hardly ever give.
Gives it the way that you expect it to be given to you.
Yes, that's answer number one. Can we add anything to it?
What did she say?
All right, you get to the point where you expect that. So that's a key part of it. Can we add anything to it, Gary?
Over time, you might feel an indebtedness to whoever's giving it to you, and so then that could create some guilt.
All right, there's that. Anything else?
Resentment.
Maybe. That's a third possibility. What about selfishness? What about the person who is the one who is always the recipient? I mean, stuff is just poured and poured and poured. You take that entitlement, and I think for a lot of people, the end result is selfishness. I deserve this, they owe me, and it is all about me. And the more I get, the less I'm inclined to what? To give. But when you find people who give, and again, it's not monetary in every case. A lot of times it's not. Somebody might give a smile or, you know, give a pleasant attitude in the workplace that they're in, those kinds of things. But generally speaking, if you're on the giving side of life and you try to do that perpetually on a regular basis, life is going to be a whole lot better than always looking to say, I want to be the receiver, right?
Sometimes somebody wants to offer to give you a hand doing something, give you $10 or whatever, and he said, no, it's okay. We got an obligation too to make them feel well, and that we will take it whether we need it or not, whether we want it, even if we turn around and give it to somebody else. The they want to do something good, and we might be preventing them from doing a good deed.
Yeah. I was, a few days ago, at the Elkhart Post Office, I was buying a roll of stamps. Had some stuff with me, stuck the roll of stamps in my shirt pocket. I don't know exactly what happened. I didn't bend over when I came out the door, but apparently the stamps caught in the pocket and didn't go down very far. Well, I walked out. I didn't see the stamps drop out of my pocket. But there was a guy leaning up against the post office. Now, again, maybe he was just trying to find a place to rest. I think he was probably a homeless fella from the way he was dressed. And he hollered at me, "Sir!" So I turned around. He said, "You dropped something. I don't know what it is. Don't know if it's worth anything." And then he went over, picked up that roll of stamps, and handed it to me. I thought, well, yeah, there were something. And my wife wouldn't have been too happy had I come home and not been able to find them. And but apparently, you know, he professed ignorance as far as what they were. I was grateful as the receiver, but in looking at his eyes, I could be dead wrong, but it looked like it just made his day. That here, I guess it was maybe my reaction, "Thank you very much." I thought, "What can I do for you?" You know, I thought, well, I don't want to insult you, you know, but I would have given him $5 to just say, "Hey, you know, you did a really good thing." But in that particular case, he was the giver, but as the receiver, like I say, I was blessed, but I think that he really came out on the better end of the stick. It was just like, I can do something. I matter. So it's not always a big thing, but you're right. Anybody else? Okay, let's move down to 36 through 38. And when he had thus spoken, this of course is taking us back to Paul, he kneeled down and prayed with them all. And then as you look at 37 and 38, "And they all wept sore and fell on Paul's neck and kissed him, sorrowing most of all for the word which he had spoken, that they should behold his face no more. And they brought him on his way unto the ship." When you look at these Christians, these elders, they love Paul. Paul had a great love for them. I'm sure that Paul prayed for these Christians as he had spent time with them at the Ephesian congregation there in Ephesus, and he prayed for them on this occasion. Paul, and the word kneel is a word which deserves importance. You find that word being used again in conjunction with prayer over in Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 14. Paul said he bowed his knees, plurals, to the Father. It's a little difficult to tell, but the way I read the text, both in English and in Greek, seems to indicate that the Ephesian elders also kneeled. So if you have the image of just Paul kneeling while the other guys are standing around, I think that's possible, but I'm not sure that that is the best way to understand the text. When you look at the word stand, do you have a point?
Yeah.
Do you want to say that now? I'll just stop for a little bit.
Okay. I'd like to back up to the
35
verse that we were looking at.
Okay.
For a couple of reasons. Just a couple of comments. One, we think about the Good Samaritan and what he did, but I don't think we probably think about the amount of time and effort it took for him to take care of that individual. And yeah, we know he also gave money in order to support that, but still it took a considerable amount of his time. I do have a question going back to 34, which he talks about having ministered to his own necessities, that in those that were with me. Then he goes on and say, "I have showed you all things how so laboring," mm-hmm. That "so laboring" is, the best I can determine, is referring back to verse 34, where he was talking about the things that he had done. So my question is this telling us that we need to not only set aside to give back to the Lord, although in a way this would be a part of that, but that we also need to be setting aside a part of what we're so blessed with to give to the poor?
Yeah, let's take a look at a parallel passage. At least it's parallel in my mind. You may not have this as a cross reference. In the Ephesian letter, so I think that's kind of interesting. Same folks, Ephesians 4:28. He says, "Let him," this is Paul, "let him that stole steal no more. But rather, instead of stealing, let him labor." Well, that's interesting, because that's what we've got over there in Acts chapter 19. "Let him labor, working with his hands, the thing that is good, that he may have whereof to give to him that has need." So maybe this was more important. I mean, it was important in every place, but maybe Ephesus got some extra teaching on this for some reason. There could have been a ton. I mean, they had a lot of poor people in the first century world, but maybe there was something specific at Ephesus, but that's not really your question. We touched on this a little bit in a previous class as far as helping the poor, that is something that God says it matters to me. And I think you go back to what Bonnie read from Luke chapter 14. God pays attention to that. That's somewhat difficult in our country because we have so many people who are scammers. The people who seek us out are, at least in my experience, the people who are actively looking for us are more than likely scammers. It's kind of like the telemarketers. You know, we kind of have to find the right people to call. The scammers usually can find us. Email, phone, sometimes the mail, a lot of different ways. But as we deal with people, and that was troubling to me, to go back to the postal story, I thought, if you are indeed a homeless guy, what can I do to help you? And I didn't have any good answers. I thought about that a little bit more. I still don't have a good answer. Now, again, I could have, you know, thrown him $5 or $10. Maybe that would have insulted him. Maybe that would have been very helpful to him. I mean, he looked like he was well-fed. You know, he had some things with him, so I'm assuming that, and he looked like he could get around. So I didn't have a real good answer. And maybe that's the way it's going to be. We're going to find some people, just like some Bible study contacts, we can't do much with for whatever reason. But we might have 10 of those, but there are going to be some times where we have some people who are really struggling, and whether that's somebody in the neighborhood, somebody in the congregation, somebody in the schools that we work with, again, we can't do it all. But we should be sensitive to that. I mean, we've kind of adopted some families here at times and tried to do some good things there. But every congregation should make sure that they try to focus on the poor and balance with that the fact that there are some people who are poor by design. And you can get into a position where you cast your pearls before swine. And, you know, we talked about an area congregation that has seemingly done that for a while over the years. But it is an area that definitely deserves attention. Bonnie?
It brings to my mind the pantry that we have. There could be families that we're helping that do not have money issues, but the parents spend it so unwisely that the child suffers. But when we give out of that pantry, we're really helping the children. We're not, I mean, we might be helping them. We're trying to help the children, really.
Yeah. Well, and we have...
Is that kind of...
Yes. We've had multiple members here picking up with that line of thought, but going in a slightly different direction over the years, and just probably too many to count, certainly several I don't know about. But there have been members here who have provided coats, gloves, shoes, boots. You know, some people have paid a camp bill. There were some children and families. And again, maybe the parents... were out of work, or maybe the income wasn't sufficient to cover extras, or maybe the mom and dad squandered money and the child wanted to go to camp. Well, it was not through their fault. I mean, it was the mom and dad that wasted the money. And there have been multiple families here over the years that have said, if a child wants to go to camp, we will pay their way. And, you know, they'll have food up there and be taken care of. I imagine there are some Christians here who have helped some people with medical bills. Funeral costs. I mean, you can just start going down the list. When we start thinking about poor, we can kind of have our definition for that. But poor doesn't necessarily mean that somebody's out there in the street corner. People can go through a poor period in life. You know, Teresa and I have done that. There have been several others, maybe most in this room, have had kind of a poor period if you got married fairly young, you know, the plant shut down for a little while or closed, or somebody was terminated from a job. The job got, you know, bulldozed. Somebody bought off the company or they downsized. I mean, 1,001 things can cause a person to be poor, at least for a period of time. And I think we've got a good track record at this congregation of doing that. And it's right. I guess that's a point that I want to stress.
Another point, you're talking about giving grudgingly and being more less to give than receive. I was thinking of the verses where Jesus was separating those to the right to the left, and he said, or they asked the question, when did we do these things? When did we feed, you know, you were sick, or when did we help you? You were jailed, we visited you, et cetera, et cetera. And that question there tells me that there are times when we give, and this is a reason not to give grudgingly, but that we give blessings that we don't understand or won't understand until Judgment Day, because they said, when did we do this? They didn't even know they'd done it.
Well, let's go back to that. I want you to fill in the blanks for me. What will Jesus say to them? When you did it under one of
the least.
Yeah. That's another word that I think we often overlook. Who would be the least in the kingdom? Well, that could span a lot of territory, but I'm sure that the least would at least go back to Luke chapter 14. The people who are blind, the people who are crippled. And again, this is another thing that has happened here with multiple members. We've had some of our members take somebody out to lunch that was poor and say, look, we're going to buy you lunch. Now, if you've got a family with kids, or you're out of work, and every day it's beans and bread, and somebody takes you down to Ponderosa, or somebody takes you down to Hacienda, or even the Pancake House, is that a big day for you?
Yes.
You think the kids are going to appreciate that?
Yeah.
And somebody says, hey, you know, it was just $20 out of my pocket, or it cost me $50. Well, all right, it cost me $100. Well, most people would say, well, you know, $100, all right, I'm probably going to notice that, especially if it, you know, just blows out of the pocket like my stamps. But again, for a lot of people, $100, they would say, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, you know, if I'm making $50,000, $100,000 a year, $100, I mean, it's not a showstopper. But for that family, 10 years later, hey, you know, they took us down to the Waffle House, you know, when I was five. They remember that. So those are the kinds of things we see people remembering in life. But I would say more importantly, we find Jesus remembering those kinds of things. And it does matter. You know, we've had people in the past who have helped with a wedding. And that's not been limited to this congregation. They have said, we will buy the cake, or we will help you get a dress, or if it's not monetary, we'll come and help you set up. You know, I don't have a lot of friends. I don't have a lot of family. I don't have the ability to put on all the pomp and circumstance, and it's kind of like stone soup. I can provide this, we can provide this, and we're going to see that you have a nice wedding. So there are a lot of ways. It's just being zealous of good works, as Paul talked about in Titus chapter 2 and verse 14. And sometimes those good works need to involve the poor. But it's easy.